Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program.
Welcome to episode 12 of Global Solutions. My name is Katie Krause. I'm an associate at Ogletree Deacons in the Labor and Employment Group.
My name is Adolfo Blombal. I'm in Ogletree Deacons Cross-Border Practice Group.
As you can imagine, COVID-19's impact differs widely by industry. So relevant regulations and guidance vary not only by country, but also by industry. So in this podcast, we'll explore industry-specific COVID-19 guidelines that employers should consider as they navigate our post-COVID-19 world. Adolfo, the first industry that comes to mind for me is manufacturing. Oftentimes, manufacturing is done in tight spaces that don't leave room for social distancing. But manufacturing is also essential. So what guidelines have you seen in countries with respect to manufacturing in response to the COVID-19 pandemic?
Thank you, Katie. You're right. Manufacturing is an essential industry, posing unique risk factors to virus exposure. And it may not be only for the work environment in tight, crowded places, whether in production or assembly lines, but also because manufacturing industry employees can spend prolonged periods close to one another. Think of anything between 12 and 8 hours per shift. For example, in the US, essential infrastructure includes critical manufacturing. This encompasses employees that make those elements and products needed to manufacture medical equipment and PPE, as well as those employees who manufacture equipment supporting continued operations for essential services. In that line, the OSHA guidelines for U.S. manufacturing industry workforce do not differ much from other countries' guidelines, and they recommend employers, among others, to generally encourage workers to stay home if they feel sick, and if possible, employers should set staggered or flexible working hours. They should also try to implement practice social distancing 6 feet between coworkers and encourage employees to share work tools, as well as train employees to proper PPE usage, maintenance, not to share them, and specific hygiene protocols as well. Now, similarly in Colombia, all the chain production, supply, repair, maintenance of the manufacturing industry is considered essential and also exempt from the quarantine order. However, what I found interesting in the clothing manufacturing in Colombia is that employees' protocol stands out as a very strict one. For example, employees must disinfect their street clothing shoes upon entry. Then, while changing clothes, they must also remove not only jewelry, but even makeup before washing their hands and faces. Then employees must suit up in clean clothing in a specific order, socks, pants, blouse, and shirts. And lastly, clean pair of shoes. And only then will be able to put on their PPE, breathing mask, etc., just before being allowed into the workstations. It's quite interesting to see how different cultures implement these steps and processes. When it comes to social distancing, the manufacturing industry, it can also be burdensome. For example, in the U.S., employees need to be at least 6 feet apart. Otherwise, employers need to modify alignments or workstations, say in production or assembly lines, so the employees are isolated from all directions and in such manner as not to face one another. However, as you know, in other countries such as Australia, general advice is everyone must keep 1.5 meters distance and they use a meter system. But they also require that they must be 4 square meters distance per person whenever this is possible. Now, naturally, employers have questions regarding how exactly to implement. And for this reason, the Safe Work Australia explained and exemplified how to calculate the 4 square meters per person, giving specific instances and examples of the formula being applied. Also, the guidelines in Australia exemplify that whenever the employees are not able to be so distanced, then the employers need to implement other measures such as plexiglass usage or curtain separating employees, or whenever possible, implementing different stages of the processes that they conduct in different facilities. What I think the most difficult part in terms of contagious risk for manufacturing industry is to keep the stations ventilated. And this is especially so when the ventilation is done by standing fans. And the US guidelines require that if using that sort of ventilation system, the air blown from one employee should not hit another. Imagine how hard would that be. But anyway, once any of these goods are manufactured, they're sold in the store directly to customers. I'm curious, and I think that you should know more about this, right? What guidelines have you seen in the retail industries and other industries, Katie, where the workers are directly involved with clients?
Yeah, so Adolfo, you're right. Retail is just one of multiple, you know, what I'll call customer-facing industries, actually. So in addition to retail, you know, you have the hospitality industry and the personal services industry. And all of these industries involve face-to-face customer interactions, and all of them have been hit hard by COVID-19. So countries have guidance that are similar for all these customer-facing industries that really address the major concerns of the industries, which are their employees interact with customers on a day-to-day basis, and that makes social distancing very difficult. In general, countries are basically have guidelines that say employees should maintain social distance between not only other employees, but also customers. And that can require, you know, rearranging stores or the business layout. When distancing isn't possible, employers should consider installing barriers like plexiglass to protect workers. That can be between the workstations or, you know, at checkout counters. Oftentimes, it's recommended that workers, as well as customers, wear face coverings in the stores. And employers should undertake enhanced cleaning measures of their stores to protect both the workers there and the customers that are coming into the stores each day. And lastly, I've seen a lot of guidelines where businesses are asked to become cashless and only accept debit and credit card payments during this time, which is requires less, you know, hand-to-hand interactions between the employees and the customers. So those are just some recommendations that generally apply to all customer-facing industries. But when you're talking about the retail industry specifically, retail is a really broad category. And it often involves essential entities like pharmacies, drugstores, and grocery stores. So these countries' guidance is focusing on maintaining appropriate social distance between the employees and the employees and the customers. In the United States, OSHA has put out guidance that categorizes retail work into low and medium risk. And that depends on whether the employees are working in non-public areas. That could be like a stock room or, you know, in an administrative role where they really don't have very much interaction with customers. Or they could be medium risk if they're working in high volume retail areas. So OSHA suggests, especially for medium risk workers, that employers use physical barriers to separate retail workers from the general public. And OSHA also suggests that employers put up signage to make sure that individuals wait in line, you know, 6 feet back from any work area or from other customers. They suggest directing customers to self-checkout kiosks to lessen the amount of interaction that customers even have with employees. And of course, they want to employers to establish protocols and supply materials to increase the amount of cleaning of frequently touched surfaces. And you can imagine in retail spaces, you know, what these are. You use them all the time. They're credit card terminals and pens and stylus and the touch screens at those self-checkout kiosks. OSHA also suggests restricting the number of customers inside the facility. We've seen a lot of stores that have specified hours dedicated to vulnerable populations, such as 65 and up. And OSHA also suggests reducing crowds by extending store hours. I thought this was interesting because, if anything, I feel like I've seen stores that have reduced store hours. But OSHA actually suggests extending store hours so that customers have more time to shop and won't be as crowded during those times. And lastly, OSHA suggests increasing delivery and pickup options to decrease the amount of customers that are in the store. So other countries have developed guidelines that are very similar to OSHA's in the retail space. For example, the UK and British Columbia and Canada both suggest that for example, shelves not be stocked during the hours that the store is open, or if shelves are stocked during that time that the store, the employer closed the aisles on which the shelves are being stocked so that the workers aren't in contact with customers. They also suggest that employers provide alternatives to in-person shopping, like online ordering and delivery. And last, interestingly, these countries suggest that shoppers not be allowed to use reusable bags unless they're packed by the shopper themselves.
I think that's very considerate of these countries to have these specific guidelines. That's very interesting.
Yeah, it is. The next industry where we've seen a lot of COVID-19 related guidance is the tourism and hospitality industry. This can include both food service establishments and hotels, and both of these sub-industries are considered essential oftentimes. So when it comes to restaurants, we've seen a lot of guidance, for example, from Canada, such as rearranging waiting areas and holding them outside. And all of this guidance is, again, focused on separating the customer from the employee because, you know, oftentimes restaurants are crowded and there's a lot of patrons in small spaces together. So, you know, we've seen a lot of guidance suggesting rearranging waiting areas or holding the waiting areas outside, creating separate dine-in and takeout entrances, or allowing guests to serve their own water. Again, you don't want too many guests touching the things that waiters touch or having guests touching things that other guests will touch. So removing tabletop items like salt and pepper shakers and things like that. One thing I thought was interesting was that both Canada and the UK suggest that restaurants and pubs should prevent dancing and singing, which are both seen as activities that are likely to increase the risk of transmitting COVID-19. And in British Columbia, for example, dance floors are actually closed right now pursuant to this guidance. So I thought that was an interesting step.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned, for example, the possibility of removing all of these items that sometimes we take for granted, right, on a restaurant table. And these guidelines are of not dancing. It makes sense. But please continue.
Yeah. So when it comes to hotels, in Mexico City, for example, hotels can only operate at 30% capacity. And that's the only guideline I've seen where hotels are specifically, you know, prohibited from having guests over a certain capacity. But in many countries, hotels can't have amenities open. So really going to a hotel now, according to, you know, guidance in a lot of countries, won't look like it did pre-COVID-19. So you can't go to a hotel and use the gym or a spa or even a meeting space. And I think this will change the way that these business owners and employers reopen hotels and go about these operations. But so we've seen this in Mexico City, we've seen it in Argentina and some other places as well, where the guidance suggests that amenities should not be reopened with the hotel. So that experience of staying in a hotel is certainly different there than it would be in other places. And the last customer-facing industry that has been affected by COVID-19, or that we're going to focus on, is the personal services industry. And personal services is a wide industry that includes hairdressers, barbers, estheticians, nail technicians, massage therapists, tattoo artists, and certainly many others. And, you know, the thing that makes these businesses unique is that the essence of their business is that they have to be in close contact with their customers to provide their services. And distancing is really impossible while they're providing their services. So the guidance when it comes to these industries is a bit different than it is with the other personal services industries. So much of the guidance when it comes to these industries has to do with things like removing product testers and, you know, making sure that the things that touch the clients won't touch other clients, such as, you know, removing brochures in waiting areas and using disposable tools on the clients and then throwing them out afterwards. And if if you can't use disposable tools, then of course sanitizing them between each customer. It's also suggested that these businesses operate by appointment only and avoid overlapping appointments so that you don't have so many clients in there at one time. I thought it was interesting that the UK has recommended that spas keep saunas and steam rooms closed until further notice. There's been guidance like that. And of course, these personal services industries have additional cleaning concerns between customers and that sort of thing. They've also tried to implement distance or as much as possible by providing barriers such as plexiglass, you know, at reception desks and maybe even at service stations to the extent it's possible, you know, maybe at a nail salon or something like that. So these are all concerns that employers should think about that are in this space. But Adolfo, we haven't even discussed, you know, one of the largest industries, which is natural resources. And do you know what guidance countries have implemented in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, when it comes to natural resources?
Yes, Katie, thank you so much. I was thinking about the natural resource industry, particularly the mining, the service a special mention on this podcast episode, because I think that it can easily be society's silent ally. Well, when most of us are working from home, the technology devices that we use, for example, the microphones we're using right now to record this podcast and everything around us, all require specific natural elements and minerals for production and their maintenance. Thus, for a few countries already have considered not only that this is an essential industry, not only during COVID-19, but also as a paramount for an economic rebound afterwards, which is the case of Australia. While the mining industry now naturally quickly adapted to the effects of COVID-19, there are issues on this industry are a mix of shared and unique to other industries that are not necessarily altogether scalable. For instance, the fact that the mines tend to be located in far-flung, rugged locations requires that the industry employees be transported to and from local towns or even flown from longer locations or housed for periods of weeks at site. This is what they call as fly-in, fly-out, FIFOs, or drive-in, drive-outs, DIDOs, employees. Now, in general terms, the industry has similar guidelines across different regions, such as keeping good and regular hygiene methods, you know, washing hands, water with soap, or alcohol gel whenever and not possible, and teach employees how to properly wear, maintain, and not share PPE material. Naturally, limit face-to-face conversations maximum to 15 minutes, and at 2 meters distance, and clean and disinfect touch surfaces and objects, particularly tools, which is something that, as opposed to the other customer-facing industry, they're not necessarily as disposable. But when it comes to remote working, country guidelines establish different things. For example, they have promoted granting of flexibilities to employees to conduct telework in Chile whenever it's possible, as well as to adapt the reward regimes for the individual situations, consider teleworking for activities not requiring the presence at the workplace or flexible schedules to fulfill their job duties. They have also considered, for example, whereas in such regimes are preferable for employees that are on the vulnerable population, such as those over 60s or that have prior conditions that can expose them and make their risks higher. When it comes to transportation of employees, the guidelines in Chile and Argentina, for example, they require sanitation of the vehicle used by workers to the workplace, the wash of hands and temperature control prior to boarding the vehicles, the favor of the usage of private vehicles to avoid direct contact among employees, and whenever possible, allocate planned vehicles to the same people each shift to minimize chances of secondary contamination. This is important because many of these employees are transported. These are DIDOs from local settlements or towns or cities that are nearby the sites of the mining industry. They tend to share different methods of transportation to the site. In terms of the fly-in, fly-out, the FIFO employees, this is particular to this industry because some countries require employers to re-examine the reduction of interstate FIFOs. And among those guidelines, the Australian ones require the employers to identify personnel performing critical tasks that can be done remotely and those tasks that must be done on site and cannot be done remotely. They also suggest that they identify on-site personnel with the ability to spend and cover up for an incapacitated person or unable to FIFO employee, or offer interested FIFOs the possibility or option to temporarily relocate to the state, territory, or region of the site. This is particularly interesting because this measure are quite relevant for this industry in this country, because different territories in Australia have imposed border closures and exceptions or permits are required to enter. Territories such as Western Australia impose strict restrictions, for example, for travelers from Victoria or New South Wales, and any FIFO employees or employees with specialist skills are not included in the limited exceptions. However, if the FIFO employees who are not a specialist and their families are allowed to enter Western Australia, but they must undertake a 14-day quarantine and agree at an agreed location that the employer's expenses. Now, another interesting thing that I found about this is in this industry is that in terms of medical services, beyond implementing health screening to the access of every single person, whether employees or providers, to the facilities, it's interesting to see that these countries such as Argentina, Chile, Australia, they have the guidelines suggesting employers to support whenever they can local health services and activities. For example, such as working with government efforts to deploy testing facilities of the virus in major resources region, or as well as identifying the appropriate support the mining operation can provide to the local communities to prevent the epidemic from spreading. We have to be cognizant that these operations are resources intensive, and by resources I mean financially resources intensive, and they tend to come and provide extra support to local communities where they operate. So it's not only the employees that they keep in mind, but also the local communities and how this virus can affect both stakeholders, the employees and the communities where they operate. But now, Katie, what do you think about the safe entertainment we're having at home these days? I cannot believe, for example, how my mom has been binge watching some series in these streaming services, and how she has actually surpassed my capacity to keep up with her. So I wonder, what are the guidelines for the entertainment industry?
Adolfo, I think you're absolutely right. When it comes to quarantine, I think we've all been binge watching our favorite shows. And when it comes to the entertainment industry, these employers obviously had to shut down for quite a bit of time, but now there's some guidance about how they can get back to their operations. And interestingly, many countries suggest that these employers should do as much remotely as possible, which seems interesting because so many of their operations, you know, are in person. TV and movie producers obviously are doing a lot on set. But for example, countries such as Canada, British Columbia, and England, or the UK in general, suggest that these employers should provide digital call sheets and contracts remotely when possible, and even hold rehearsals remotely if they can. These countries also suggest that these industries should limit the number of departments or even the number of individuals in departments that are working on set, if possible. For example, the lighting department and the art department shouldn't both be on set, you know, on the same day. You should limit the number of departments that are there in person for distancing purposes. Also, you should only have cast members on set when it's necessary to have them there, and only keep them in position for as little time as necessary. And then lastly, the one that I thought was most interesting, the piece of guidance that I thought was most interesting, was that TV and movie producers should try to avoid performing in a face-to-face position, which we'll see how TV and movies look when they come out after COVID-19.
Yeah, I think that will be interesting to see how will they perhaps use some technology or some computerized system to make two actors that are now facing each other, make it look as if they're facing each other.
Exactly.
Well, I think this is for us. I just want to make sure, guys, that you join our Global Solutions podcast next week when Ryan Martin and Justin Tarka will be discussing subsidies, whether they're really expiring, whether they'll be extended. And just want to say thank you so much from both of us and have a great day.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed